Now, David concludes this session by expounding on what it is like to be a servant of the Lord and how that ultimately brings us comfort and true alignment with spiritual will.
As a servant of the Lord, now you bring forth the contextual energy, you know, in certain things they picture it like a white light, let's say. But I think that limits it. What happens is you're surrounded by an invisible, infinite field, which potentiates certain phenomena and does not potentiate others. I consider it like gravity. It's like committing yourself to God surrounds you with a different kind of gravity. Now, this gravity potentiates certain phenomena. So the emergence of potentiality depends on local conditions. One of the local conditions is intention. The crossover between science and theology and spiritual reality is afforded by the Heisenberg principle. Therefore, a phenomena is already changed just by the witness observer to begin with, much less by the intention of the witness observer. In the research that hasn't been done yet is to measure to what degree the consciousness level of the observer, the witness, profoundly influences the result. We know this in medicine. Academic medicine treats many people that don't get better, but then they go to clinical medicine, which are more like healers and more versatile. And the healer, the clinician, brings about a healing that the academic couldn't. So the academic calibrates at 440. The clinician, the holistic healer, is at 445. Well, these are all logarithmic numbers, so the difference between 440 and 445 is considerable. I noticed that many years ago because I hired, you know, I had a huge staff, 50 people. And some therapists consistently had great results and others did not. Well, what was the difference? So I got rid of the ones that didn't. And in those days, I didn't know about calibrating levels of consciousness, but I found that those were the highest levels of consciousness. So if you are seeing a healer or a teacher, anybody with a high level of consciousness, and their commitment is to the evolution of the emergence of your potentiality as an experiential reality, the likelihood is much greater that this will be accomplished. And of course, this is part of the energy of the teacher. It's traditional that the energy of the teacher, what it does is it implants itself in the aura of the student. By assent, the student acknowledges the spiritual origination of the teacher's teachings and beingness. And by so doing, the energy fields of the teacher's aura are brought into the aura of the student. Now, this happening is permanent, and by consciousness research, it'll last 25 lifetimes. And when needed, that energy field is still there. In this lifetime, I stood at what I call the final door. Everything had been surrendered. There was nothing but total silence and infinite nothingness. I had already surrendered bliss, gone into ecstasy, surrendered joy. And now I had nothing left to surrender to God, except life itself. And everything was silent. There's no one else there. You're all alone. You're not in a higher space where there are lots of beings. There's nobody there at all. There came the knowingness, all that I have left to surrender to thee, O Lord, is life, to surrender my life itself. And then, I'll tell you, I won't kid you, it was a terror. I surrendered what I thought was the core of my life itself. And it was a feeling, an agony of dying. In fact, it's the only time you can die. The ego's belief system is so innate since the beginning of protoplasmic life, you might say. It believes it is the source of life itself. So I said, this too, I surrender my life to thee, O Lord, and I surrendered it. Then up came a terrible fear, and out of the fear came a knowingness that all fear is illusion. It wasn't a thought, it wasn't a belief, it was a knowingness. Out of this aura here, speaking to you today, was already the knowingness, the vibration of a great teacher way, way back many lifetimes ago. And the aura of that great teacher, I picked up the frequency and the vibration of this knowingness, which is really from Zen. So I surrendered life itself, and the terror came. It was fierce dread, let me tell you. It was fierce, fierce terror for a few moments. And then I felt myself die. You actually experience the agony of dying. And then I stood in a splendor and a revelation beyond all description, and I can't describe it now or I won't be able to continue to speak. The radiance of divinity is the source and essence of all of life, of all creation, of the essence of that which you are, shone forth with such incredible, startling beauty and stunning, awesome, that I was struck dumb. The mind didn't speak for years. See, because what happens is what I call the persona learns to imitate life. It still doesn't speak. It knows, but it doesn't speak. So there's no way of knowing what's going to be said until I hear it myself. I have no idea what it says, because that's called the purusha. So what was the self, what was the person, is replaced by a condition. So enlightenment is a state. It's a condition. It's not something you acquire. It's not something you achieve. What happens is the ego self is removed, and another condition prevails. And this condition is hard to describe. One talks about it as it. You notice I never say I, because there wasn't any I there. There is only that which is, and it speaks, and it is. And the rest of this is transitory and of no great interest. If you say it's going to be run over tomorrow, I say, well, goodbye. There's no great investment in it. There was a temptation to the mind just before the final door, you might say. There came out of the absolute silence, the mind was silent. There suddenly came a knowingness. Now that you know you're beyond personal karma, now that you know that you're not answerable, now that you know that there is no vindictive, angry God who is going to punish you, etc., all power is yours, own it. All power is yours was a silent knowingness. It was like the ultimate luciferic temptation, and I saw who'd walked through that pass. Very few, really, who walked through the pass, who said yes and who said no. And I understood the agony of the Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane. All power is yours, own it. You know that there's no karmic price. You know that there's no God to be faced, there's no accountability. And because of your power, you can dominate others. And this came about as a result of surrendering love as an attachment. Once you surrender love as an attachment, now there's nothing holding you back. So then, yes, came the luciferic temptation. And you can see those on the planet who have owned the luciferic temptation for the power, the secular power that it gives them, you'll see. But the price you pay is that of enlightenment itself, so it's not worth the gain. See, that knowingness was already there. So my hope is that to what degree I can express the truth in its most useful manner, that it will remain within the consciousness of the student. You know, just as he reaches for the rabbit, flash goes through his head, and he got it. Then I'll be up in him. By then I'll be jumping with joy. Yeah. Hot doggity, hot doggity, hot doggity. Because I'm sure there's some guru somewhere backward in the time that just chortled and went into glee when he realized that I realized that death is not a possibility. The reason I turned down all power is mine because I already owned all power. I was infinitely powerful. So there was no temptation. It says all power is yours. All power already was mine. All power was mine already. So the Lucifer had nothing to offer me. All power is mine, because once you experience your oneness with divinity, the power of divinity is yours, you see? Not yours personally, but yours as a quality.